You're listening to KMIH 88.9 The Bridge, and I'm Chloe Yang, joined by gardener Siska Morris, a well-known master gardener in the Pacific Northwest. He's regularly featured on King 5's segment, Gardening with Sisko, and gives gardening tips on how to best maintain your plants. Sisko also has a book, Oh La La, and travels the globe to give gardening presentations. Welcome to KMIH, Sisko, and thank you so much for joining me on the radio today.
Hey, it's really great to be here. This is super fun.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad you could be here because I just love gardening, and I'd love to learn a little bit from you and your expertise, but I wanted to start out with asking you, when did your gardening adventures first begin, and how did you first get into gardening?
Well, I gardened with my mom and grandma when I was a kid back in Wischeeskin. That's Wisconsin, you know. I'm a cheesehead. And a church down the block from where I lived actually put up signs on the telephone poles that they were looking for an assistant gardener. I was a 10-year-old kid. And when I gardened, I always wore a sombrero because I was into this TV show that I know you've never heard of because you're way too young. It's really funny because some of my audiences, they all know this show, some don't. It was called the Sisko Kid TV show. And the hero of that show was a Mexican cowboy who I really liked. Actually, I liked Pancho, his sidekick, the best. But everybody called me Sisko because I was such a fan and I wore a sombrero all the time. So anyway, I was 10 years old. I told my mom and grandma I was going to go get that job at the church. I didn't even go to this church or anything. So the sixth time I went and harassed this poor priest in charge of hiring, the guy said, "All right, you little blankety blank." First time I ever heard a priest swear, by the way. "You little blankety blank, blank, blank. Don't ever come in this office again. You got the job, but don't come in here ever again." And when I went and told the poor caretaker at a church that I was his new assistant gardener, he was not looking for a 10-year-old kid. It's the first time I saw a grown man cry, so.
Oh, no. What kind of plants do they have in Wisconsin?
Not many.
Yeah, it's pretty flat there.
Well, it's not so, it is quite flat. It's got one little area. It's kind of hilly, but not much. It's got a lot of bugs, and it gets really hot and really cold. So our joke was there were four plants that you could grow. You know, lilac, hosta, peony. I can't even remember what the others were, but there weren't many you could grow there because it just got so cold in the winter, you know. But you could grow great perennials in the summer, and we grew a lot of annuals, and you can grow great vegetables. We grew tomatoes that were so big, took three guys to bring one into the house.
Wow, that's pretty big.
That's pretty big, yeah. So yeah, we grew great vegetables. It was a lot easier to grow veggies there than it is here.
For sure. My brother goes to school at Wisconsin-Madison.
Oh, man.
And when I was visiting him, it was super pretty. It was around fall time. But then a week later, it was like frozen. The stairs were frozen. The cars were frozen. And there was like 3 feet of snow. The weather's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy there. I love Madison. It's my favorite town. It's just a really cool town in Wisconsin, you know. I grew up in a place called Wauwatosa. It was just a suburb of Milwaukee. But it was a nice town, nice people. It's pretty.
Have you visited ever since?
I used to go back all the time when my mom was still going. But she's no longer there. So I go back and see some of my old buddies now and then, but not too often.
So after Wisconsin, you got your gardening assistant job. But then how'd you get on King 5? That's like a pretty big jump.
It was a long trip. But so I went to gardening school. It's kind of an interesting story. So I got a job. I hitchhiked here from Wisconsin in 1971. Nobody could do that now, you know. But in those days, there were a lot of people hitchhiking. I got out of the service and I went back to Wisconsin. I was in Asia. I went back to Wisconsin, And I didn't fit in very well. You know, I had changed. So with no money, I hitchhiked around the country and got over here because I had old army buddies I wanted to see, and I knew they were getting out. So one of the first jobs I got was working up on the North Cascade Highway in a little town up there, and they had a great garden. The town is New Halem, and people go there to take tours of the dams up there, but we had a real beautiful garden. It was a town owned by City Light. So I was a gardener up there, even though I did gardening and I learned from that old guy at the church. And he taught me a lot of ways to garden without using poisons, which was really great for me. So after working all summer, so right away the head gardener knew I knew gardening. So I ended up working with him kind of as his sidekick all summer, and it was really beautiful up there, you know. And so at the end of summer, they were going to hire one permanent gardener. And I go in the room, sure, I got the job. And it was Carl Faulkner, nicest guy you'll ever meet. He said, "You think you're getting a job, right?" And I said, "Oh, I'm sure I am." And he goes, "You're not." He goes, "Because all winter, there's nothing to do up here. You drive a snowplow around, that's it, you know." He said, "You got a good gardener. You're not a great one, but you could be." And he said, "You got to go back and go to horticultural school, get some more scientific backing and things for your knowledge, and you're going to end up a great gardener. But I'm not giving you this job because you're not going to go anywhere here." So I went back, just went to a two-year gardening school and got great education. And I became a master gardener after that, which is really great. And that really got my career going. And so I worked for a whole bunch of different gardening companies and things, and I was a professional pruner. I had my own company for a while. Then I got hired at Seattle University, and within a year, I was their head gardener. It was just weird how things worked. So I was giving a lot of garden talks and things just because I love giving talks. I give over 50 a year now. I used to give 100 a year for a while. So anyway, I got this note in the mail asking me if I wanted to try out for a TV show. And I was like, "Oh, la, la," you're really excited. And so the show was called Northwest Home and Garden TV Show. Host of that show, people aren't going to believe this, Jeff Probst from Survivor was the host of my very first gardening TV show. So anyway, I had to try out, was at the Red Lion in Bellevue. And you had to, you know, memorize these lines and say them. So, you know, I was directing the grounds care at Seattle University. And we had a problem. A water main broke, so I couldn't get going. I needed to get to do this tryout, you know. So we got that fixed. But I was also a certified arborist, so I had to go to this housing development where they were having an argument over whether this tree should stay or not. That was a really complicated problem, took a long time. I still can make it on time to my big TV attempt, you know, my first tryout. I get in the car, get on the freeway, all four lanes stop, big wreck. I'm stuck. I get to my tryout 45 minutes late. And somebody gives me a packet of stuff I have to memorize. And I can't even memorize my own name. I'm terrible. I have to improvise, you know. So I get in there. I'm sweating like a dog, stressed out. I'm trying to read these lines. And I'm like, I don't have a chance, you know. The guy right before me gets up, says the lines perfect, everything. I'm about to get up to say the lines. And the producer guy, who I hadn't really met, he gets up and says, "Well, we only had this room to this time. I'm so sorry, but this is it. We're done." I didn't even get to try out. I'm so bummed I can't see. I come home. I see my wife. I'm like, "I didn't even get to try." So she's like, "Oh, that's too bad." You know, the phone rings. I pick it up. It's this assistant producer I never met. They go, "We want you on the first TV show." I'm like, "Oh, really?"
And I said, okay, I'll be there. They told me what to prepare for. And my wife is like, I thought you said, I was like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm going, you know. So I went, and it's funny because a big producer guy and all these camera guys and sound guys are walking around. I'm standing there for 15 minutes. Nobody's paying me any attention. So I finally go up to the producer and I go, hey, I'm here to do the show. He looks at me, he goes, who are you? I said, I'm Cisco. He goes, you're not Cisco. That other guy's Cisco. I said, well, I'm Cisco. He turns to the camera crew, goes, we got to do it with this Yahoo now. I'll never forget it. But I did it really well. I was on that show every week for the whole time it was on for 7 years. It was on Cairo TV. To this day, I always wonder, who was the guy that they thought was Cisco and what happened to his career? Because I never met anyone that I don't think he ever got on a show. So, but, you know, that's the way life is. Things happen and are really a big surprise. I was on a show with Julie Andrews once on King 5. It was New Day. It's on during the day. It's a talk show. And Julie Andrews is the best. But I remember her saying, when I got my chance to make my career, she said, I never did anything to harm anybody else or hold them back. But when my time came, I was ready. And that's what you got to do. You got to be ready to move when the chance comes. So,
for sure. And I think that was definitely a happy mistake, because now that brought you really far and you're like touring the world now for that.
Oh, yeah, that's fun too. So I lead garden tours around the world. I guess it would be more accurate to say I host them. I work with a guy that has a travel company, and I've worked with a lot of different people that own travel companies, but I like this guy the best. I'm leaving in a week to go to Sicily and Malta, lead another tour. So I lead them all over the world. I think I've done 26 of them. I'm not absolutely sure if it's 25 or 26. I've lost track. Oh, they're so fun. We go see the best gardens. You know, you do other things because you get some, like, spouses that get dragged along. This one guy wore a hat that said, I hate gardening. I'll never forget. I ended up really liking that guy. But so we do go see some of the best gardens in the world, but we also do wine tasting, and we've gone down salt mines. And, you know, we always find, we went to that place where they built the oldest, they have a museum of the oldest Stradivarius violins in the world. And they have to play them every day or they're no good. Mm-hmm. So the guy that plays them came out and gave my group a private concert. It was so good. I looked over at my wife. She was just crying, you know. So we do lots of fun things, not just gardening, but it's really fun. I've seen the world's greatest gardens. Oh, my gosh. I just gave a talk about that down in Eugene a couple weeks ago. So, yeah, it's really fun traveling the world. Nice part of my job.
Sounds super exciting. What's your favorite place that you've traveled to for this?
Oh, boy, that's such a hard question. You know, South Africa has this unbelievably great garden that I just love. But England's got the best gardens in the world. So if you go there, you can't go wrong. Sissinghurst, Great Dixter, you know, that the Chelsea Flower and Garden Show, you got to go to that at least once in your life, you know. But then France, Italy's got some fantastic gardens. The lake region has got these gardens out in the middle of the lakes that are just unbelievable. The family that owns Porsche, they own the lakes. And the islands with the gardens, you know. So Australia's got great ones. New Zealand, Sicily's got some great ones. Plus, they have some of the best ruins you'll ever see because they're from Greece. They're old Greek ruins, you know. So yeah, I just love it. And we always have, you know, like great guides on the bus. So we learn all about where we are and everything. It's funny because I never took a tour until I started leading them. I wasn't really a garden tour person, but I love leading these tours. I learned so much about every country. It's unbelievable. So
No, that sounds super fun. Have you been to any Asian countries?
Oh, Japan. I was stationed in Korea and Okinawa for a while when I was over in Asia. But I led a garden tour to Japan last year. Oh, was that great? It was wonderful. And I've been to Thailand a number of times. I was stationed over there too. So, oh yeah, there's great. But Japan, it's their gardens are so fantastic and they're so old. And one garden in Japan, I was watching this guy prune this Japanese pine, and it's their most famous pine in the whole garden. The guy had to study under an old-time pruning expert for 10 years before he got to prune the pine by himself. That could only happen in Asia, you know, so it was really great, yeah.
Because I just love going to bonsai gardens. They're super pretty, and I love how the trees are all very unique to themselves. They have, like, a very interesting form, and it's just so interesting to look at. I could look at bonsai trees for hours.
Me too, you know. And, you know, there's that great bonsai garden up at where Weyerhaeuser used to be in Federal Way. They've got 400-year-old bonsais out there, you know. But our Japanese garden right in the arboretum, that's a great garden. And I used to teach Elder Hostel when I worked at Seattle U. Now they have a different name for it. But in those days, they called it Elder Hostel, so people over 60 or something could come, and I'd teach them about gardening, and then I'd take them to different gardens in our area. And I always took them down to the Japanese garden in Arboretum because they do a great job. That's a really beautiful garden, you know, so I absolutely love it.
It is, for sure. As a master gardener, I'm sure you have a plethora of very loved plants, but do you have a singular favorite plant?
Well, I'm a perennial gardener. I call myself a mixed border gardener because I have trees in my garden, but I only have a regular size garden in Seattle. So, you know, I don't have 5 acres. I don't even have an acre. I got about 6,000 square feet, something like that. And I have the great misfortune of being married to a great gardener. It, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't trade her in for anything. She's very va-va-voom, if I do say so myself. But the problem is, we go out the door and I go, I'm going to plant a ligularia here. And she goes, no, we're putting a lobelia. No, we're not. Yes, we are. Whenever the neighbors see our hands and feet in the air at the same time, they go, oh, God, garden wars again. So we divided the garden into his and her gardens. Whenever some comes over, we stand shoulder to shoulder and go, which side do you like the best, you know? So I don't have that much room. So I avoid trees that get big, you know. But I have got some unbelievably cool plants. One of my favorites. So I'm what I call a mixed border gardener. So I've got shrubs. I've got trees that don't get too big. And I've got all these incredible perennials. I'm also a rare plant collector. I love rare plants. And I'm totally bummed right now because my garden hit 11 degrees for 5 days in that cold snap we had. And it massacred some of my rare plants, took them right out. But, you know, at the same time, I'm like, all right, I got room for something new. Because the problem for me is my garden's so packed because I love every plant on earth. You know, I go to these talks and I hear these experts go, if you don't know where you're going to put the plant, don't buy it. That's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. I see a cool plant, I buy it. I may walk around for 3 weeks trying to figure out where the heck to put it, but I'll find a spot for it, you know. And so one plant I love that not many people are going to know what this is, but it's called a Melianthus major or honey bush. And it comes from South Africa. And when I was in South Africa, I saw native people walking through the bush and they would snap off the flower off this plant. It's kind of a reddish brown flower. It's not that pretty. The plant is real tropical looking with real compound leaves.
And the foliage is real blue. And the one I have is called Antonow's Blue, named after a really famous gardener who's no longer with us. I'd see the people snap off the flower and drink the nectar out of the flower. I used to write for the paper. I wrote for the PI when it was going. And then when they quit, I got hired by the Times to write. So I wrote for many, many, many years for the paper. And once I wrote an article about the Melianthus major, the honey bush, and I told how the people did that. And that article came out in the morning. I came home late in the day. There were 200 emails on my computer saying, "You idiot, that is the most deadly poison plant on earth." It only killed a few people. It wasn't a big deal. But the thing is, I saw the people drink the nectar, so the nectar is not poison. They're right. If you rubbed the leaves and then you went in and ate something, you might get sick. But so I didn't worry about it. But I've never drunk the nectar, though, just in case anybody's listening. I wouldn't try until you do some research. But so that's one of my favorite plants. It gets about 4 to 5 feet tall, 4 to 5 feet wide, just becomes this blue tropical thing. It's got all these little points on the leaves, and the leaves are like a foot long. And in the fall, every little point of the leaf gets a little ball of dew on the end. It is so cool. It's unbelievable. So I love that. I love, oh my God, what else is one of my all-time favorite plants? Well, you know, I love things like dahlias because they're such great performers and they can get you out of trouble if you do anything wrong. So like, for instance, I'm married to a Canadian. So Canadian women, and I don't know, maybe men too, they won't use the clothes dryer. So she hangs all her clothes on the clothesline. Sometimes I don't look before I turn on the sprinkler. I got our sheets stretched. So I had to make a few bouquets. And that's what I love about dahlias. The more you cut them, the more they grow. So you can get more and more, you know. But no, I love things like podophyllum, which are these really, we call them May apples. And they're these real unusual foot-wide leaves with little flowers hid underneath, and then they produce fruit underneath, and they're all spotted. They look really cool. People always ask me, you know, can you eat that fruit? And I always say, well, the American natives serve the fruit to deworm people. So if you've got worms, you can eat them, but otherwise, maybe not. I've got giant hardy bananas in my garden. They get 25 feet tall and get bananas. Although if you eat one of those bananas, you never need to eat another prune for the rest of your life. They're like eating plastic. They're terrible. But you do it just for the look, you know, because it looks so cool when they get a bunch of bananas on them. They use them in the Himalayan mountains to make a fabric. So I don't know. There's not a plant that isn't my favorite, I don't think. I love Japanese maples, by the way. There's so many good ones. My new favorite one is called fairy hair. It stays really small. It's got these teensy fine leaves. Oh, and then I've got a ginkgo called munchkin. So ginkgos, you know, they get 60 feet tall. This one has leaves about, oh my gosh, they're 4 inches total. And it's the cutest little thing you've ever seen in your life, but it's tough as nails. And so, yeah, there's, I don't know, I could go on for 3 days about my favorite plant.
So you've got quite a few.
Yeah, but I always tell people, do perennial gardening. If you want to have fun, if you want a pretty garden that's nice and neat and everything, forget perennials, just plant shrubs and have a lawn. But if you want to have fun and really have a garden that people stop and just, what is that plant? You know, like Tigridia, this little bulb that comes from Mexico. Each flower lasts 1 day. The first year you plant, you get one flower for the whole summer. I recommend it to people to get one flower. They're like, oh, this was really great, you know. But the next year you get 5 flowers. After that, they flower all summer long. The flowers look like the most colorful orchid you've ever seen in your life. And they seed themselves, so they cross-pollinate. You get ones that you didn't plant that are the most spectacular. Look at things you've ever seen. It's so exciting. So perennial gardening, you can make all kinds of color combinations. The flowers aren't long-lasting on some are. You got to use the color and texture of the leaves and the foliage. And so, no, perennial gardening is the way to go for sure.
But then what fruit trees would you recommend for Seattle weather?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because I used to have a ton of fruit trees. So I love the easiest fruit tree to do is Italian plum because they're self-fertile. They don't get too many diseases. Usually no insects get in the plum, and they are just delicious, you know. Oh, my gosh. So Italian plum is really easy. You can't go wrong. But if you get apples, what you want to do is find out what apples are disease resistant. You don't want to put in a fruit tree. You got to spray. So if you go to raintreenursery.com, they are the kind of the big fruit nursery, and it's a mail order. They're way down in Morton, although I've gone there a couple of times. I've even done TV down there. But so they list all of the fruit trees that don't get disease. So you don't have to fight apple scab, which is a pain. It gets on the apples, you know. And so, and I've got one called Spartan that's really good. But apple gets, apple maggot. And so you got to put plastic bags or pantyhose footies around the apples. It's kind of a pain. I consider it sort of a Zen experience, putting the pantyhose over them, you know. But the pantyhose didn't really work that well. And so we've gone to using plastic bags and stapling them on there. And that works pretty darn good. And we try to reuse the bags because, you know, you don't want to add the pollution and everything else. So we're really careful about that. I had three different pears, but now pear rust has moved in. It's this horrible disease. I pulled my pears out. I just couldn't stand fighting that disease. I don't use pesticides. Seattle U, I'm really proud of this. We are the first university practically in the country to stop using any pesticides at all, even herbicides, which people rely on it at, you know, cities and schools and everywhere use a lot of herbicides because they can't stand the weeds growing. We figured out ways to outwit the weeds. It was really cool. So I'm proud of that.
Yeah, and that's especially good for all the little dogs that are there.
Yeah, and I brought my dogs. The whole time I worked at Seattle U, I brought my dogs with me. They were totally famous on campus. It was so fun. They could run around, do whatever they wanted, you know. I remember one time a woman called me. We had a little coffee shop, and it was right in the doorway of one of the buildings. But people were feeding the squirrels all the time. They'd come out and throw something to the squirrel, which is the dumbest thing you could do on earth. I'd get calls from people, faculty members and people, and they'd go, the squirrel isn't going to let me out of the door. Can you bring your dog over? I'd bring my dog and would chase the squirrel out of there. So, oh gosh, it was so fun having my dogs at work. And you know, but when you think about it, people use things like weed and feed. There have been a lot of research from the National Institute of Cancer finding out health problems with some of those things. And so there's no way I was going to apply that on the lawns at Seattle U where the students are lying on the grass all the time playing frisbee and bare feet. And I mean, and the rest of the university community, you know, so that was one of the main reasons I did that. Plus, I bring my own dogs, you know. I don't want them to get sick either. So, yeah, it's like I tell anybody listening, I'll tell you, if you could figure out there's a lot. Both my books I've sold tell a lot of the ways that at Seattle U we gardened without using poisons. So you could find out how to do it. It makes gardening so much more fun working with nature instead of against it.
This kind of goes into one of the questions that I have about my own garden. Not necessarily weeds, but another kind of animal. how would you stop deer from eating plants?
That's the classic question.
We have a family of deer at our house, and they always visit. They ate our weeping cherry tree, so it looks a little bit bald right now. And it also ate all of our dahlias. We planted like 20 dahlias. They're all gone. Kind of sad.
Well, deer are the hardest problem. There is that the definition of a deer is a 200-pound slug. They're terrible. They eat everything. There's a book out by a good friend of mine, Deer Proof Gardening. Yeah, right. She mentions all these plants they don't eat. And every time I give a garden talk, I'd say, yeah, they don't eat this. Someone raise their hand and say, yes, they do. They're tough. And there's a famous story of a woman sent me coyote pee because she said that if you put these golf tees with sponge glued on top, you dip them in the coyote stuff, put them around the property line, and the deer are supposed to think the coyotes are marking their territory. I stuck these in a woman's garden up in Issaquah, and because she had a really big deer problem. She was a big, big gardener. And, she called me up in 2 days and said, get this stuff out of my garden. I'm driving up thinking what she's so upset about. I still don't know how they get the pee out of the coyote. I've always wondered about that. But I do know it comes from coyotes that are in heat. This stuff was developed for bounty hunters. That's, she had 8 big dogs in her garden. She couldn't get up to go. I couldn't either. They sang love songs all night long. So I got those out of there. I called her up a week later and said, when those were out there, did it stop the deer from coming through? She said, no way. The deer walked right by them, ate all my plants. WSU says the only thing that works is a fence. It has to be 6 feet tall, and it can't be at the bottom of a hill. Then it has to be 8 feet tall. It's really the only thing. You can use these. You know, there's a whole bunch of repellents out there, and some even have Bitex. That's the stuff they stuck on my little sister's thumb so she quits sucking her thumb. And it lasts pretty long. But the problem is it breaks down. You don't know it. It just takes one night. The deer get everything. So other than a wiener dog, I don't know what will keep deer. Wiener dogs do work till they get old. Then they get lazy. So there's no cure for deer. Honest to God, there isn't one.
Because I like the deer. I enjoy seeing the deer walk through our yard. I think it's very peaceful, very serene, but not when they eat my plants.
Yeah. I've had people try to feed them a ton because they thought, you know, if I feed them a lot, they'll be full. They won't eat my plants. Well, they just told all their buddies, hey, these guys, come over to this guy's house. I admit it, deer are sweet to see, you know, but boy, if you're a serious gardener, you don't like seeing them. And you know, there are more than there have ever been before because there's no predators really to speak of here in Washington, you know. We do have cougars and they get them sometime, but not in our backyards. And I have a friend lives right in the middle of Bellevue. She has a spectacular garden. She got up the other day, looks out the window, there's 2 deer just chomping right in the middle of Bellevue. So, there's no easy answer to the deer. I guess, you know, you can just learn to love them and figure, okay, if they eat some of my plants, that's the way it goes. But if you're a serious gardener, that's pretty tough. Then you got to really use the repellents, and you got to do it way more often than they say to do it, or put a fence in.
I think I'll just accept the fact that the deer are going to eat my plants.
I think that's the easiest solution, that's for sure, you know.
Yeah. Okay, I do have another question/problem. Our teddy bear magnolia that we just got ran over by a garbage truck.
Oh, geez.
It was about 5 feet tall when we planted it, and now it's like less than a foot with a few leaves hanging on. So do you think that it'll grow back to be a magnificent magnolia?
It's hard to say, but it's probably worth a try. At Seattle U, the city talked me into growing ginkgos behind our athletic building. And all it was blacktop. We had to jackhammer the blacktop out to plant these ginkgo trees. All the cars parked on the blacktop, ran over every one of them. But ginkgos are extremely tough trees. Every one of them came back. They have some of the most interesting shapes you'll ever see. But I think if you cut it clean so there's no damaged tissue down there, and it may branch out. It might end up really cool looking because it's going to branch out from really low down now. The problem is you're not going to see flowers for maybe 5 years now, and maybe more. Some magnolias take really a long time to bloom. But you may end up with a really cool looking tree. My puppy, I rescue puppies sometimes at my house. I've had a lot of puppies. They always are going to get your most expensive, rare, and unusual plant. And so one of my puppies ate my Stewardia tree right down to 6 inches from the ground. It's got the most beautiful shape now. This was 20 years ago, and it took a long time before it grew back. So it's worth a try, and it'll be an interesting experiment. But I'd say in a couple years, if it's not getting kind of an interesting shape, it's going to send out way too many sprouts, so you're going to have to thin them out and do all that. But if it doesn't look good after 2 or 3 years, I might go, you know what, I could save a lot of time, buy a big one.
That's true, but they are very expensive.
They are expensive, and at Seattle U, we were one of the first universities that planted a lot of magnolias. They were really rare when I started work in 1978 at Seattle U. God, that's a long time ago. I'm getting old, you know that? But, and they are so cool, though. They are expensive. I would definitely try. If it's still got leaves, depends on how much damage it did to the root system and everything. If it really massacred that, then you're in big trouble and it's not going to come back. You should know this year it should put out quite a bit of growth. If it doesn't, that's not a good sign.
I'll keep an eye on it. We have an ume plum tree, but it doesn't have any plums yet. It's about 3 years old. How many more years do you think that it'll take to start producing some fruit? It's like
plum. I'm trying to remember if that needs a cross-pollinator, because a lot of plums do, and I think Japanese plums have to have a cross-pollinator, so you need to look that up. Because if it does, you're going to have to stick in another one, or you're never going to get any plums. You'll get plums, they'll be real little, and they'll fall off because they're not pollinated. A plant knows it's on Earth to reproduce. If it realizes there's no seeds in those plums because the bee didn't visit, forget it. I'm getting rid of that plum. They just drop them off. So you need to look that in. But typical fruit trees produce within 5 years. So if it's not producing within 5 years, it needs a pollinator real bad. And, we've got bee problems now. Our bees, overuse of pesticides. Now farms produce all of one thing where they used to produce different crops. So the bees are taking a hit. They don't have as much food. That's another reason why we should all do, gardening, a lot of variety of plants, because the more different kinds of plants that you plant, the more bees are going to have something to eat. So you're going to have something for everybody,
Earlier, you were telling me about a story with Bob Rivers and his bees. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Bob Rivers, I had my TV show with Megan Black, my TV partner, who I just love, and she's a spokesperson for the Bellevue Police Department now. So she and I did, 12 or 13 years we were on a show together called Gardening with Cisco with Megan Black, and it was a big hit, And Bob Rivers was quite a big hit on the radio. And I loved listening to him because he was on the rock and roll station, We decided to do TV in his garden because he was a big beekeeper. And he's a great beekeeper. So we did a really fun show in his garden about raising bees and how they pollinate different plants. And in return, he had me come on his radio show three times, which was just a blast and a half. So, and I loved everybody on that show. And your instructor was on that show.
Yeah, Joe Bryant.
Yeah, I remember that. He was really funny. So I think they had three or four people that made comments and worked with him. And that was really fun to be on that show. Really fun.
Yeah, that sounds super fun. Do you enjoy beekeeping? Because that seems a little bit scary to me.
Well, I've never been a beekeeper. But what I did keep was our native bees, so they're mason bees. And it's a totally different thing. It's much safer. Not that beekeeping's dangerous, but you got to do it right or you could pay the price, you know. And I have been stung so many times over the years just being a gardener because you're going to get nailed now and then. You don't see that hornet's nest and run for your life, you know. But so on my garage, there's a bee called a mason bee, and they're way better pollinators than honeybees are. And they're native to Washington, or little blue bees. And so we call them orchard mason bees, and they're really good for fruit trees. So when I had three peach trees, I had a plum tree, I had four apple trees at one point. So what I did was I started getting these native bees. And you could buy little kits. And so they have some of the cocoons in there. And you set these up. And so they're in wood blocks. They used to be. They do it different now. So I had these wood blocks. They're about a foot long, 6 inches wide. And I drill holes in them. And they had to be a certain size. And so the first bees would come out of the kit. And it's kind of interesting because the first ones that come out don't pollinate anything because they're the boys. They're waiting for the girls to come out, you know. But then they're the best pollinators you've ever seen. They're horrible flyers. They fly into the flower and they just go, and pollen flies everywhere. They're covered with pollen. Then they go fly to another flower, boom. And, you know, to get one pair, a bee has to go to a different pear tree flower on a different kind of pear tree, and then it has to hit this flower on this pear tree. It has to happen 30 times for one pair.
Oh, wow.
So think how hard bees have to work. So these guys, they only fly about 100 yards maximum, so they pollinate your flowers over and over again. And they go back in and lay their eggs in these holes that you made. And pretty soon all the blocks are full. I had my whole south side of my garage covered with these blocks. I had so many bees. We took a block and put it on our patio table where my wife and I eat. And these bees are so gentle. We sit and watch them go in and out of the block while we were eating dinner. Sometimes they go in the wrong hole and they go, oh, sorry, go find the right one. And they totally don't sting, although a good friend of mine said he sat on one and he said it was a very uplifting experience. So they are capable of stinging, but it's very rare. So a lot of people get these mason bees now and they're great.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, and there's other bees you can even rent mason bees now. And if you go on the computer and just do a search, rent mason bees, it'll come right up. And it's right now is when you put them out. So you keep them in the garage in the winter. And there's other bees now that you can either rent or buy. Leafcutter bees are great for your vegetable garden because they fly later. So it's really exciting. There's so much to do in nature, so much to learn, and it's so fun, you know. So
That sounds super cool. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah.
I heard, lastly, on King 5, that Ooh La La came about somewhere in France involving a baguette in a bathroom. What's the story behind that?
Okay, this is my most famous story. This is in my new book, Ooh La La. And so my newest book, Ooh La La, is all short stories about my garden life. But they do teach you about gardening. But this story definitely does not teach you about gardening. So my wife and I are huge travelers. She went to school in France, and we've traveled so often and so much. We, just the two of us, hiked the entire French Alps, 360 miles. Just the two of us. You stay in huts up at the top of the mountain. It's real hard hiking. You go down, up, but you get to the hut, and they give you a blanket. You only need a sleeping sheet, and they feed you. So the first thing you say when you get to the hut is, je voudrais un vin rouge, s'il vous plaît. I'd like a red wine, please. So good for pain, you know. So anyway, but that's another story. But we did a 1,000-mile bike ride in France. And we had our tents on our bikes and a parler français tout le temps, you know. So it was a lot of fun. And so we're riding along. This was pretty many years ago. And if you have been to France in the last few years, you've seen these things. But we had never seen them because they were just putting them in France. They were outdoor bathrooms. They looked like big plastic igloos. So we saw it, and we recognized what it was, and we pulled over on our bikes, and I sat on the bench, watched our bikes, and she had to put 2 francs in to go in and use it. So pretty soon she comes out. She's holding the door, and she goes, you're not going to believe it in there. And I go, what? She goes, it's spotlessly clean. And it plays great music. And I'm like, oh, boy. So I get up and start looking for 2 francs. Well, Mary goes, why waste 2 francs? I've got the door open. Just go use it. And I go, yeah, why waste 2 francs? There's one little thing we didn't know about these French bathrooms. They're self-cleaning. When the door shuts, it means the person who was using it left. It's time to clean. So I shut the door. I walk to the front. Whoosh! I get blasted right in the chest by this big blast of soapy water. I run to the back. Whoosh! From behind. I go to the door. It's locked. Whoosh! From the side. Whole time, Mary's sitting on the bench watching this bathroom going, hearing, ah! Finally, the jets stop. The door opens. I come staggering out, drenched from head to foot. And here's this little old French guy walking by, wearing a beret, holding a baguette, looks at me and goes, oh, la, la. So that's why I've been saying it ever since. Oh, man. I was clean.
That's for sure. That's a pretty crazy story.
That wow. is. And you know what's funny? I have met quite a few people that have got trapped in those French bathrooms. There's no sign that tells you you're about to get cleaned if you're in there and didn't put in your 2 francs, you know. So
I guess that just goes to show that you have to pay your fee.
You gotta pay your dues in life, no doubt about it.
Or else you'll get splashed with soapy water.
Boy, did I get splashed. I'll tell you, I was drenched.
How long was the bike ride, though? That seems like it'd take quite a few days.
Boy, I don't recall how long that took. I know that hiking the 360 miles of the Alps took 29 days. I say 29. Mary says 28. We're never going to know which it was. But the bike ride, I'm thinking we did that in a couple weeks. But I'm not absolutely positive because we were staying in a French vineyards. A friend of ours managed the vineyard, so our job was to pick figs because they had a ton of fig trees. By the way, I love fig trees. Oh, my God, I love figs right off the tree. They grow great here, too. And so we were staying there for a couple weeks, and then we did the bike ride, and then we stayed with another friend for a couple weeks. So I've lost track how long it took, but I can tell people one thing. If you travel in France, and other parts of Europe are pretty good too, but France has the best campgrounds.
They're really good. They're not expensive. They're not like American campgrounds. They don't have, you know, campfire rings and any of that stuff. You just put your tent anywhere you can. But they have great showers. And the people are so nice. We'd ride in on our bikes and we'd walk to town because they're always within 1 kilometer of a town. So you can go in and have a great dinner in a French restaurant, you know. And we'd come back, there'd be a big bowl of fresh fruit in front of our tent, you know. And the French people loved to talk to us. And I could speak fairly good French if people talk slow to me. If they go at a regular speed, I just can't follow it. But so when they'd sit and talk to us, they'd talk really slow. The French always give me a big compliment for my French. They say, vous parlez comme une vache, means you talk like a cow. I'm sure that's a big compliment, no doubt about it. Oh, yeah. If you're going to rent a car and want to see France, and I got this book, The Best Little French Towns. Oh, my gosh, did we have fun. We went to visit all these teeny towns in France. And that one, we rented a car. But we always stay in French campgrounds. You don't have to go pay for a big fancy hotel. You don't have to hunt for a hotel. You just drive in a campground. No matter how full it is, people move their tents so you can cram yours in somewhere. They're so nice. So, yeah, I mean, I've stayed in campgrounds in other parts of Europe and things, but the French are the best of all of them. So.
Awesome. Well, I think that just about wraps up this interview. Thank you, Cisco, for joining me on KMIH today.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. And I wish you great success in your endeavors. I hope you end up a famous either radio or TV person.
Thank you. You've definitely made a positive impact on the gardening community and just have brought so many smiles to so many faces.
Well, I'll tell you, I've had the most fun career anybody's ever had anywhere. I just love it, and I'm nowhere near ready to stop yet. So.
Well, I hope I can join you on a garden tour.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That'd be so fun. Yeah.
That'd be fun. I think you'd really enjoy it.
For sure. Well, thank you for listening, and I'm Chloe Yang with Cisco Morris on KMIH 88.9 The Bridge.
Au revoir, tout le monde.